All righty, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Hector Linares. I really appreciate that you're joining me on the last session of the day. I hope the TechEd has been a great experience for everybody. So at this session, we're going to talk about storage automation, storage management in Virtual Machine Manager. And it's a pretty small crowd, so if you guys want to interrupt me with any questions, feel free. We'll finish right on time so you guys can get to the party. So I know that people are packing and getting ready to go. So for those that have attended sessions today on Virtual Machine Manager, you're pretty much well aware of all the pillars within the product when it comes to our investments in infrastructure, fabric management, cloud and delegation, multi-tenancy, and also services and application lifecycle management. And so I'm not going to go too deeply into this particular slide except to say that with CTP2, you're going to see about 452 commandlets. That's an increase in the number, and they'll continue to go up. So again, we're continuing with our ability to automate anything through the UI, absolutely due through the CLI. We've made major investments in storage management, which we'll cover today, along with networking, compute, bare metal provisioning. A lot of that has to do with Windows Server 2012 and its capabilities, primarily around scale and host and VM count support. So those numbers will go up. Today we support 400 hosts, 8,000 VMs. One 64-node cluster can support 4,000 VMs. So we want to make sure that we can scale to those limits as well. We continue to invest in clouds, and a lot of the network abstractions are now leaking into the cloud itself, so you can create, all your tenants can now have their own virtual environments. And in services, we've done some investments around being able to deploy to a non-domain join and non-trusted domains. So setting that stage as far as VMM and investments in SP1, now dropping primarily into storage automation. And these are the 12 areas that I'll focus on today. I've got demos for most of these as well. So, we'll be switching back and forth. So from an end-to-end mapping perspective, there's when we set out to build out VMM 2012 and continue in investing in SP1, there's a lot of customer angst around what actually happens under the covers when it comes to storage. Virtual machines are out there, Hyper-V hosts are out there, you just don't know what's underneath. You don't have that direct visibility to understand how the arrays, pools, LUNs are configured and how they relate to your VMs. So the first complaint is, I don't have enough visibility. I might have created a Visio diagram 2 weeks ago or a month ago. It's out of date. I got to talk to 15 different people, and some little bit of a tribal knowledge. Others have their own tools. So you never have one consistent picture. You don't have that visibility into those management tools to bring that picture together. And even if you did, even if you could get access to those tools, they don't really relate anything to virtual machines. And so the customer asks really, how does the storage actually relate to my VMs themselves and Hyper-V hosts? And finally, when it comes down to troubleshooting, when you're actually trying to diagnose a problem or root cause a problem, and the storage guys have to be involved, typically it's two different teams, two different languages. If it's the same guy handling both, obviously all the knowledge is contained within one person. But in medium-sized, larger environments where you might have two people handling this, or large enterprise where it's different groups, maybe even different, different mindsets. You never actually have that ability to bridge the gap between the virtualization admin and what they see and the storage admins. So we went off and said, we don't want customers to be playing a game of Marco Polo when it comes to where are my VMs and where are my storage. You want to have the ability to see end-to-end how VMs relate to storage. So we went off and built to VMM 2012 and our storage automation. The architecture in RTM, which is a shipping product today, looks like this. And so on the right-hand side, you've got VDS hardware providers. This is our old way of being able to mask and unmask LUNs. Do a very minimal discovery, nothing major. We didn't invest too much in this area, but that's where we first started. Those interfaces are now deprecated in 2012, and we've moved on to a new service called the Storage Management Service. This is a service that talks SMIS down to the storage arrays via an SMIS provider. So we've invested heavily in standards-based management, and it's a big theme that you're going to see in Windows Server 2012 around SIM and DMTF, and even within VMM, you've got a lot of investments in SMASH, IPMI, DCMI, and so you'll see a lot of that moving forward. From the storage side, we invested in SMIS, and this actually gives us all of the capabilities that I'll be talking about today. Primarily, I'm going to focus on discovery, masking, unmasking, and LUN provisioning. We don't go after the full set of storage capabilities. So VMM is not a storage resource manager. It is not going to replace existing storage tools. In fact, we expect that VMM coexists with existing storage. We also have agents on the Hyper-V side, and that's where we get all the information around VDS, disks, LUNs, iSCSI information, fiber channel. So all of this data is, you know, we're gathering this data. We've always had the host side, had a little bit through VDS. Now we've got a boatload of information through SMIS. So slight change in SP1, it's really on the VMM server side. So in RTM, we deprecated VDS interfaces. I mean, in other words, we're not interacting with them. In SP1, we don't have them at all. Right? So something to keep in mind, if you already have an existing environment with VDS hardware providers, VMM will no longer talk to them. So we're switching over to a new API called the Storage Management API. This is actually something new in Windows Server 2012, and that's really the only change that we've done from a storage automation perspective. But what does that give us? So you might have seen this architecture slide in previous sessions, primarily around storage management from a Windows Server side. So in the platform now, we have storage management capabilities through this API surface. It's a WMI API, VMM, file server team. Any third party can actually talk to this API, fully documented, fully public, nothing proprietary here as far as the API that VMM is using. The value add that we have with this from an SMIS perspective, any existing provider that works today with RTM just works with 2012, Windows Server 2012, and therefore SP1 of VMM. We've also introduced support for a new provider model called SMP. This comes with Windows Server 2012, so it's another provider model. Underneath this layer as well, we get storage spaces. For those that are familiar with storage spaces or planning to deploy, this is the same API that we're using across the board for storage management. There's about 85 commandlets. I'll go through some of them later on. But this gives you full access to the underlying storage from a platform perspective. So if you actually want to start creating automation on top of your EMC, NetApps, or whatever arrays you have, you just need the provider, plug it into Windows Server 2012, you've got full access. You actually don't need VMM for that. VMM actually comes in and adds value on top of those APIs, some simplifications, a lot of automation, a lot of workflows that we have. That's really where our value add comes in. And actually, in fact, if you look at under SMIS service, that is actually the service that we shipped in VMM 2012 RTM. It's a proprietary service for us today. That code has been brought into Windows, enhanced, brought up to the quality of Windows, and now ships as part of the product. So if you go to your installation of 2012 today, right-click on Features, go to the list, you'll see Windows Standards-Based Storage Management. Enable that feature, and you've got SMIS support. All right, jump to the first demo. All right. So I'm not going to type in all the commands, but I'll be using Start Demo for this. So what I'm going to show first is initial discovery. This is VMM reaching out into the environment and going off and talking to the providers. So if for those that are familiar with the VMM UI, I've got workspaces on the left bottom hand side. I'm going to click on the Fabric workspace. I'm going to scroll all the way down, and I've got my storage information here around classification of pools, providers, and arrays. In the ribbon, I'm going to go to Add Resources. Click on Add Resources and Storage Devices. We've got a wizard-driven discovery experience where you will type in, for example, a URI for a remote machine. This is one of my VMs. It's running the NetApp provider. 59880 is a typical OpenPegasus port that will be used. When you hit Next, it'll tell you how many arrays are managed by that provider. You can have one or many. And then for those arrays, you'll have one or more storage pools. From a storage pool, when we bring these in, that means we're bringing in LUNs. We're bringing in initiator groups. We're bringing in a bunch of information about the SAN itself. Okay, so I'm not going to complete this one because it's already managed. Let me jump back here. All right, so I registered a provider. I assigned the classification, which was demo, and I brought it under management. That means we imported all of the information. That means from our commandlets, you can do a get SE storage array by name, and you can get, now this is just some of the information, but there's a boatload of information underneath this. I want to focus, in this case, on storage groups. Storage groups in the NetApp speak are IA groups, initiator groups. In Hitachi, they're called host groups. In EMC, they're called masking sets. This is the object or the associations between initiator groups, initiators, targets, and LUNs that gives you masking, unmasking. Okay? So I've got all that information pulled in. Right now it's in an array, so you don't see all of them. So I can list one storage group. In this case, I'm listing one storage group for this array with an endpoint that is an IQN. Right? I happen to know what IQN that is because it says it in the name. If it was a worldwide name, you would have no idea what host that is. But what I can do now is I'll list the initiators in that storage group, and I've got the full IQN in here. So what I'm going to do now is go search through all of my hosts and find the corresponding IQN. So I've got three hosts in the environment with iSCSI enabled. First is the host name, then the IQN. So I've got three of those. Obviously, you know, you can go one step further, filter by that, and basically I'm just doing a for each where the IQN matches, and that's actually the host that where that initiator belongs to. So with a few commands, I've walked from the array to the storage groups, to the IQN, the initiator name, all the way to the host. You can go further and say, well, what are my disks? What VMs are on the disk? But this is just a small sampling of how to do it, of what we get with initial discovery. So even if we didn't know of the hosts, we can actually tell you what they're assigned to by IQN or worldwide name. Could be a Linux host, could be a Solaris host, even a non-Hyper-V Windows machine. Okay, so a lot of information there, and this is the kind of information you'll get in Windows Server 2012 out of the box once you plug in the provider. So you could see yourself, for example, unmasking storage to a SQL machine, an Exchange machine. Well, if they support it, that's a different story. Anything like that. So you know, with Windows Server support, it's actually very powerful. All right. So we start with SMIS SimXML-based providers. This is what we have today as far as support for the type of provider and the protocol. We've added support for WMI-based SMIS. So in this case, for example, the LSI MegaRAID. For those MegaRAID cards, they'll have an SMIS-based provider. In the SMP space, we've got partners like Dell EqualLogic and Nexen who are producing SMP-based providers. So now all of these are supported natively through VMM. For those that are deploying, so a lot of questions we get around Left Hand and EqualLogic support. One of the reasons why we actually couldn't support it well in 2012 is because we didn't know how to model dynamic targets. So for those of you that have worked with these arrays, when you create a LUN, you get a target for every LUN that you create. VMM assumes there's a common target set. So it'll, you know, you log into the targets, and any LUN can be exposed through one or more targets. In this case, you actually have to log into every target for every LUN you create. SP1 now has support for that, fully automated, and then you can, you know, you can do that entire workflow through VMM. I think there was a question. No? Okay. So that's part of SP1, that support. We've also introduced support for SAS. So RTM focused on iSCSI and Fibre Channel. Now we'll have SAS support as well, and we bring forward all of the discovery provisioning. What they call, some arrays call attach, it's really mask unmask, and the arrays that fall into that type are either the HP2000. They have Fibre Channel, iSCSI, and SAS, but this isn't a SAS case, and also the LSI and Genio. So what is it that we do? Well, what I showed you in the demo before, we basically take two sides of the equation. We get the hypervisor, get storage. For level one discovery, we bring in information like the array, the pool, target ports. In the NAS case, and I'll have a demo for this, in the NAS case, we actually will bring in the file system for the NAS head. Okay, so level two discovery, we go one step further and say, if you want to manage this environment now, for the pools, we'll bring in LUNs. We'll bring in initiator IDs. That's what I showed before. We'll bring in storage groups. We'll bring in all the associations that bind everything together. In the file system side, we'll bring in file shares and all the permissions. So we'll be able to tell if a particular host is permissioned for a particular host has permission to access a share. All right, that's the storage side. Big piece here is that we're introducing support also for Windows file servers, SMB 3.0 support, and NAS devices. All right, now let's go to the hypervisor. So on the hypervisor side, we use a host agent to get fiber channel, iSCSI, SAS information, all the port information as well. And that's the first thing we do, and I don't think it looks too obvious here. When we do mapping port to port, we're taking all of that information, the vPorts, the ports, the IQNs, and the storage groups, and bringing all that together. So the animation there isn't too great. Anyways, that's the port mapping. That's what I showed you before. That you know, we basically bridge that in our database. Then we take all the LUN information, map that to the ports as well. So we take pass-through devices, VHDs. We're able to map it end-to-end all the way to the storage. So let's get to go for a few examples of those. All right. So I've got one VM in my environment in this example that's a SAN-based VM. I did rapid provisioning to create it. That means the VHD is sitting on the SAN. It's either a SAN or a CSV. Now I have to apologize. I've been using this machine nonstop for a week, so everything is slow. But hopefully it's not going to blow up here. Really bad. Okay. Let's give this 1 second, so hopefully it's not choking. Okay, sorry. So I hit enter too many times here. All right, so I got an object, my VM object, my SAN VM 03. This is a CSV example. So I've got this VM with the VHD in the config in that folder on volume 2. Currently it's powered off, it's on a particular host. Then I said, well, all right, for my VM, I've got a virtual disk drive. That virtual disk drive is actually the position on the bus for the VM configuration. And the VDD virtual disk drive has a hard disk associated to it, a virtual hard disk. So I'm going to pull that object out, and I'm going to get the VHD object. In this case, it's a VHDX. Its location is on volume 2. There's a host volume. This is an object on our side that's associated to a particular host. So what I'm going to do with the VHD is get the host volume. So the host volume on the Windows side is actually physical drive 4, and that's actually the host disk. Again, another rich object. So what I can do now is actually get that storage disk. So for that storage disk, I've got a device ID, some unique information. I've got what is considered the LUN, right, the ID for the logical unit. But I've also got an object called the storage logical unit. This is an object on the array side. So since I have a rich object, I can then do host disk and storage logical unit. Now this is the information from the SAN. I've got my LUN object. The LUN has a name. So in this case, it's on volume 4 of the NetApp array. It's got a classification and another rich object called a pool. From the pool, I can get information on remaining space and total space and the array. From the array, I can get more information on total capacity, capabilities, for example, is clone capable, is snapshot capable. For those of you that are using VMware, there's a new interface called VASA that actually they're asking partners to implement. And so similar information, except that we can do all the provisioning as well. They're just using it for discovery. What supports dedupe? Does this array support block level tiering, snapshot capabilities, all of that? Very similar that we get through SMIS. And finally, the storage provider that I added before as part of discovery. All right, so that's my SAN VM. So let me do the same for a VM on a file share. So in this case, I'm talking about a Windows file server running Windows Server 2012, SMB 3.0 support. Right, that's actually the first configuration where it's supported. So I'm going to do the very, very, very similar steps here. Well, get the VM object. In this case now, you'll see that this VM is located on a file share, on a particular file share. I'll get the VDD object. The VDD will give me a VHD. The VHD now, you'll see here, is located on the file share as well. And this is the location for the file share. What we don't have in this CTP2 build is actually the file server object or the file share object. That's actually coming in beta, so I can't show you that piece right now. But what I did instead is actually I'm using the native APIs in Windows to get file share information. So I'm going to pull out the specific share for where the VHD resides. So basically, this information right here. I'm just going to do a split, pretty simple here. And I'm going to get the file server name. Okay, those are the two pieces I need. I'll bridge that together and use the get SMB share. Okay, this is part of Windows now. This is all inbox. I'm going to create a session to the remote machine, which is a file server. Right, and I'm going to get some information about that file share from that file server. Right, for example, the volume information, scope information, availability, just a bunch of things coming from the Windows file server. This is a remote machine. Today we don't have this information. In the future we will. In a future build we will. Okay, so this is for the file share. Next piece, I'm going to get the cluster group, i.e. the role that is hosting the share. So in this case, I'm on cluster one. I'm running, this is VMM general file server 01. That's my file server. Okay. And in a similar way, I can do this for actually, I think this one will be pretty straightforward. I'm going to do the same thing for another VM that I have on a scale-out file share. So we'll support both, deploying VMs to a general file server, general use file server, and also a scale-out. For those of you in the room, how many of you actually have been using scale-out servers in 2012? Have you actually had a chance to deploy it or play around with it? All right. So scale-out file servers will leverage CSV v2 in the new failover cluster. And that actually will give you continuous availability of a file share across multiple nodes. Okay, so that's a new capability from our perspective. We'll support both. In this case, the key piece I want to show you, I'm going to go through the same steps of getting the file share, getting the file server, getting a handle to the file share. But then the availability type will be scale out. So this kind of information we'll also have in VMM, so we'll be able to bridge this all in beta, just not in this particular CTP2. Coming out at the end of the week. Okay. So in RTM, one question we typically get is, do we do a one-time import of storage and then leave it alone? And the answer is no. We actually do every 24 hours, we'll refresh that information. Now, since we are not the only manager of that array or the storage, there's no guarantee that maybe a LUN that was there before, that was unmasked, isn't masked today to another host. Right? Things are going to change, especially if you're refreshing every 24 hours. So in SP1, working with our partners, going to the SNIA PlugFest, we've actually incorporated lifecycle indications. In WMI speak, you would think of these as events. Okay, these are events coming from the array through the provider up to the cache on the storage management API. This will account for any kind of changes to the computer system, like available space, changes to pools, volumes, and masking sets. Those are the three key areas where we will be getting indications. That means in near real time, we will have the most up-to-date information around the volumes, pools, and masking sets. Right? So that means that you don't have to increase your refresh to every hour. In some cases, that's actually a heavy operation. If the discovery takes 20 minutes, you don't want to be discovering every 20 minutes. So this actually will alleviate that and actually give us the ability to leverage the cache more often. So that's all new in SP1. That's not available in RTM. So RTM, you will have to wait for the 24-hour refresh or do it manually. Okay. So once you've brought in all this information, once you've got all this rich data coming in, all the real-time events, updating masking sets in London and everything else, next piece is to actually be able to make sense of storage, because you actually want to give the storage out to your end users. But you don't want to give them pool 0046. You want to give them gold, silver, bronze, cheap and deep, whatever you want to call it, right? There's some SLA, some performance guarantee that's behind that pool, behind that storage. So this is where we've introduced classification. Classification will continue to work for storage LUNs and pools, and now we'll extend that to file shares. So if we know the pool where the file share comes from, we'll be able to classify it as gold, silver, bronze. So from a terminology perspective, in EVA, they're called disk groups. and NetApp. They're called aggregates. They're not the volumes. They're the aggregates. And I think this is the EMC world. They're called pools, thin pools or whatever. So the whole point here is that it's more of a it's a metadata information that we're associating with the pool. And you can call it whatever you want. It's just text at this point. And you can assign these to any pool. The key piece to note here, our placement algorithms have been updated to account for classification. So if you want to deploy a VM to gold, you just have to mark the VM and say, I want it on gold. Well, per VHD. You mark the VHD and say, I want it on gold, and we will deploy it to gold. That means we will find the host with the right storage and the available capacity to deploy that VM and guarantee you gold. If you have a more advanced scenario where you have some on gold and some on cheap, we'll do that as well. We'll put the VHDs all in the right location. All right. So you've discovered, you've made sense of your storage. Now you want to start allocating this out to your users. From an allocation and assignment perspective, there's allocation, which actually is a construct of VMM. Basically, it's saying, take this storage, give it to this host group. For those that have deployed VMM, host groups are just a collection of hosts and clusters. We haven't unmasked anything yet. When we assign, that's when we actually expose the storage to the host or the clusters. When we provision disk, we can do thick, thin, snapshots, clones. One common ask that we have is, do we support thin provisioning? The answer has always been yes, except that we didn't have the option to override that. So if you have a thin pool, how do I create a thick LUN? In some cases, on some arrays, there's a performance penalty where you actually want that. So in SP1, we will support that. So why did we go down we did discovery, we did classification, and why did we actually go down the automation piece? So 3 years ago, this is when we initially started this work with the industry and the standards bodies. But the feedback that was coming back from our customers, and actually this continues today, is first, I spent too much time waiting for something to be provisioned. So especially in the private cloud world, you can't wait 2 weeks for a LUN. Especially if the end user wants to consume some storage, you can't wait that long. You want to give that at least the appearance of elastic computing, elastic capacity. So first is I'm waiting too long to get some storage. So let's say I want to take that plunge and actually automate. Why haven't some actually do? So there's some that have. 14% of our TAP customers have actually done some automation. The rest haven't. 50% said, listen, I don't have the experience. I just don't have the technical chops to do all that automation work. I've got other things to worry about where I really need to add value, where I really need to focus. This is just not one of them. The other half said, I want to. I just have too many arrays, too many APIs. I can do one all the way, but then I have inconsistencies, or I do all of them, and I do like one function, maybe create LUN. But so it goes back to the expertise and time. And finally, for the 14% that actually did it, they did it to reduce human error, right? They just want to avoid those situations where a LUN gets provisioned to the wrong host, the wrong worldwide name was put into the zone, and so you couldn't get that, you couldn't expose the storage correctly. So this is what we heard from our customers, and this is where we get to the allocation and assignment. So we start with allocation of storage to a host group. What that turns into is actually what's allocated to a cloud. So for those that have actually created clouds in VMM, there's three main components: compute, storage, networking. So in the storage piece, we're basically saying these clouds have access to these classifications that are part of this host group. Host group could have 50 classifications, 1 through 50, super bronze to super platinum. But a particular cloud, you might say, I want this to be my gold cloud. I want this to be my tier one application for my tier one team. They're going to get super platinum. This other team here, they do some dev test work. I don't want them consuming my high-end storage. They're going to get super bronze. So by super, I mean really low-end. And so you have that flexibility, right? You don't have to expose all users to all storage on all hosts. You can actually control what classification and what capacity they have. So you bridge together the host group allocation. You've got your delegated users, their quotas, and that comes together in the cloud. So from a storage provisioning perspective, I mentioned before the thin and thick LUN provisioning. It's always been there, so I'm not marking it new. except that now you'll see in the UI the ability to pick thin versus thick, where it's supported. Masking and masking continues, and new in SP1 is support for SMB3. So SMB3 protocol is new as a part of Windows File Server, and that's also being adopted by the industry. So you can think of the NetApps and EMCs of the world will have support for SMB3.0. In either case, we're actually working both with the file server team in Windows and also with the industry. So we will treat SMB3.0 file shares the same. In fact, we will have all the ACL management for file shares, whether it's Windows-based or NAS. Right? So we've done a ton of industry work, working with partners on extending the DMTF profiles on ACL management, but really it's identity and permissions. And with Windows, it just works because we're using WMI. All right. That is not cool. I don't know what I did that one, but I think this one was actually just speaking to what I did before. Let me. Right. So the key piece I want to show here is back in the VMM console, I want to go to the library. So I spoke about how to do all the allocation. In my fabric environment, I'm going to go on all hosts, right click on all hosts, and go to properties. From properties, I'm going to drop down to storage, and this is where I've got my allocation page. I can allocate storage pools. I can also allocate logical units or LUNs. All right, so now that I've got my allocation, I've got all the classifications associated to that. When I go off and create my cloud, I'm going to go jump to services. And in production, I'm going to click on this, right click on my production cloud. In its scope to all hosts, I've got multiple pools associated with all hosts. But if I drop the storage, I've only allocated, I haven't allocated any storage to this particular one. I'm actually just going to allocate demo. And I'll hit OK, and now customers can use demo in that cloud. The last piece that brings this all together from a deployment perspective, so I've got a template here. I right-click on my template, go to properties. Hardware configuration, this is where all the VM configuration comes in. So from a VHD perspective, I can actually pick my classification. So in this case, since I'm a full administrator, I see all classifications. If I was just a cloud user and I can create templates, I would see demo. That's the key piece to note here. So Fabric Admin has full access, full fidelity into the environment. Self-service users will only see demo. All right. So another area where we invested as far as automating the provisioning of storage is rapid provisioning. We did this before Windows Server 2012 and the introduction of offloaded data transfer. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that feature in Windows Server. If you know of xcopy SCSI commands, where you do block-level copies, that's been even Windows supports it for the past 10 years via the backup APIs. This is a new xcopy SCSI spec, xcopy Lite. It's been introduced into T10. That's the Windows work, platform work. And so now you, with Windows, you can actually do offloaded data transfer or SAN-optimized copy of files with arrays that support that capability. From a VMM perspective, we'll have integration with both ODX and the ability for SANs to create snapshot and clones. In this case, we're talking about a VM, about a SAN that supports SAN snapshot or cloning. Think of the Flex cloning in NetApp, for example, where they're really efficient at creating LUNs and then using them for VMs. So we understand the SAN. We know where the VHD sits. We can mark a VHD in the library as SAN copy capable. We bring that all together with a template, and when we go through the new template wizard, we can actually find the right host that's actually has storage that's actually visible to that storage, right? So a host that has been unmasked or has been logged into the targets for that array, we can go off and then from a new VM creation perspective, create the copy, unmask the copy to the host or cluster. Once we unmask it, we'll go off and mount the disk. We'll get the VHD. From the VHD, we'll attach that to the VM, and within a few minutes, you'll have a fully functioning VM. So that's one VM per LUN managed by VMM. Right? And in an ODX, you'll have that's what gives you VHDs into a CSV LUN, into a volume, like a CSV. All right, so that's the distinction here. Rapid provisioning in VMM today is one VM per LUN. If you want to go into a CSV, you're going to need ODX, offloaded data transfer. Okay, so you did all this work to get the VM on the SAN. Now we want to make sure it stays on the SAN. So masking for migration purposes, we support masking and unmasking of LUNs between hosts, between clusters, host to cluster, cluster to host, host to library, pretty much in any direction you can think of, except, you know, like VMware to Hyper-V. We don't do cross-platform. In fact, we only support all the storage automation on Hyper-V. But within that world, you'll be able to mask and unmask as long as we have access to the storage. For those initiators where you don't mask and unmask traditionally, where you do iSCSI log on, log off, we'll support that as well. Dell Equalogic, HP Left Hand. If you've gone off and provisioned your VMs to a LUN using NPIV, we'll go off and discover that and then delete the vPort on the source, create it on the target, and everything's up and running. It's a safe state. In this case, it's not a live migration. For that, you're going to need synthetic fiber channel. So if you're interested in having a tier one application with maybe 10 or 15 terabytes of storage under the covers, running that in Hyper-V and getting all the benefits of live migration, that's Windows Server 2012 and synthetic fiber channel. So that's the migration piece. We're optimizing. We're going to make sure that we leverage the optimization in ODX. So when we do migrations, they're actually done by the SAN. All right. So this is the one that has me worried right now because of the slowness in the system. But I'll kick it off anyway and see what happens. All right, rapid provisioning. All right, so I'm going to create a VM called MyRPTechEd01. And I'm going to use the template that I used before, that I showed you before, which is Win2K12 HA template. HA in this case means that I want it highly available. Therefore, I'm going to pick a clustered node. All right. So for those that have actually used the command line to create VMs in 2012, we've introduced what's called a VM configuration. VM configuration is actually a property bag that we use to actually configure or specialize a deployment. Previous to this, you had to use something called job groups. I don't know if any of you have actually had a chance to do that. Not very fun. We're trying to make it better. So VM config is the better way of doing this. So you create a VM config object from your template. This is actually stored in a database, so it is a write back to the database. It's not a client-side object. You get the host that you want to deploy to, and then you set that as part of the VM configuration. So you update your VM configuration and say, I want to deploy to this host. So this one, last time I tried this took 42 seconds, unfortunately. Hopefully not any longer than that. So unfortunately, this part of the presentation is called rapid, and this is farthest thing from rapid at this point. So CTP2 builds, unfortunately. So just something we weren't anticipating. Okay. So I updated my configuration. Update SE configuration will actually run that configuration through placement. So before you used to use get SCVM host ratings, now you use update configuration. Now placement will fill in a bunch of information for that VM. It's actually going to be aware of the fact that it's SAN copy capable, so it'll optimize on the back end some information where it won't require you to pass in the location. Because when we do rapid provisioning to a cluster, which is what's going to happen in this case, what's happening in this case, we actually don't use any a drive letter. We'll actually just use a volume GUID. We manage that, so it's all connected for you. We end up doing all of that ourselves. So actually, in this case, this is the part where I'm actually updating the configuration. So just bear with me. It's going to work. promise. Okay, so another piece that I'm going to do here is actually tell the VM config, I want to explicitly use SAN. I'm doing this as part of the demo. It actually would have used SAN by default. So deployment, if you see here, my deployment option is use SAN. I can actually override this and say use network. So if I don't care for the SAN, I don't want to do rapid provisioning, I can say use network and point it to CSV volume 2, volume 3. So yeah, you have the flexibility. You don't always have to use a template that is SAN copy capable for SAN deployments. You have the flexibility for both. What you can't do is if a VM, if a template is not SAN copy capable, it doesn't magically become SAN copy capable. So, you know, that's the one distinction there. Okay. So now I'm actually going to go off and deploy this VM. So the job starts here. This one will take a while, unfortunately, in the current situation that I'm in. The key piece to note here is see if it actually has gotten to this piece yet. Not yet. So what this should have showed you is the VM will go off and talk to the SMIS provider. From the SMIS provider, we'll go create a LUN. And so it's telling the provider, go create a LUN. The provider tells you, right, go snapshot this LUN. Snapshot in the NetApp case. They are fast. We're the ones that are slowing it down, unfortunately. So it'll create the snapshot, and then once it's created, it'll unmask it to the cluster. Okay, so I'm getting down to that piece now. So in this case, I'm going to show. So this is the new one that I just created. It has no maps. So for those that are familiar with NetApp, I haven't unmasked it to anything. So the next piece of after I create the LUN is to actually unmap it, to actually unmask it. So now I've added both initiators. This is all done through SMIS. Now the VM has been unmasked. If I jump to my host, disappeared, so it's probably going to fail. Let's give it a few seconds here. All right, I'm not going to go too much time here. Key piece I wanted to show you here is that we're leveraging the capabilities of SMIS, leveraging the capabilities of the SAN, and to be able to rapidly provision VMs. We'll do this as well for providers that are SMP-based, for the Equalogix and the NextSANs as well. So apologies that this part of it is taking too long. I'm just going to move on from here. Okay. Another piece of automation that we introduced in VMM is the ability to onboard an iSCSI array. So in this case, what we're doing is we're actually, the customer asks that we got, especially now with 64-node clusters, for those of you that actually use iSCSI SANs, what do you have to do for every node? Got to enable iSCSI, got to log on to all the targets. There could be one target, there could be four or many targets. So we actually do that automation in VMM. You can actually let us pick the targets based on subnet, or you can tell us explicitly which IP to target to log on the initiator on. We'll do a persistent session, we'll add it to the favorites, and so we will basically do that all through VMM. We don't have one way of doing it where it's one click for everybody in the 64-node cluster, but you could see yourself automating this in PowerShell where you can do this easily. So we also do all the work on the unmasking side, so that's where an SPC is the SMIS term for SCSI protocol controller. That's what we use to mask unmask. At the end of this slide deck, there's a whole set of slides on masking and unmasking. If you're curious on what VMM does, I leave that to the end. Not really worth going through right now. Okay. So disk. So from the cluster side, I don't want to show it right now, but what we do on the cluster side, we will actually automate all of the disk and volume operations as well. So we discovered storage. We provisioned storage on the array. We did the unmasking. Now we're going to go off and say, I see that disk. I'm going to initialize it, create a partition, format it. In the cluster case, I'll make it available storage or CSV. In Windows Server 2012, we'll make sure that we'll create it as CSV v2. So we'll do all that work. We do all that automation. So let's, sweet. So here the VM has been created, and if I jump back to my cluster, I've created my resource, and in the disks, I've added my disk as well. So I've done all the automation to get this going. This is an available disk, it's not a CSV. Actually, I don't think it shows a type here, but anyways, that's the disk that we allocated. All right, so let me jump back to the workspace, the Fabric workspace. I'm gonna minimize this piece here. So now here, I'm gonna click on my cluster. So this is my cluster, I'm gonna right click, and I'm gonna show you provisioning of storage to a cluster. So I've got two CSVs already assigned to this machine. I'm gonna go off and add four more. So I've already pre-provisioned four LUNs. I'm gonna click on every one of these. They're 2 gigs, so even if I did full format, they're not gonna take a long time, but regardless. I'm gonna quickly format these. These are going in that CSV, so I don't have to worry about where they're gonna get mounted. We're just gonna pick the default location. So volume 1 and 2 are already there. This will take some time, unfortunately, because of the delays that we're seeing here. But what you're gonna see in a little bit is actually all of the work we're doing to automate this on the cluster side. So you can imagine yourself doing this against a 64-node cluster manually or through VMM. Basically, in a few clicks, I was able to select all my LUNs, and eventually you will see them start popping up in this part of the UI. Right? So I show this for the automation piece. I'm not actually doing any of the work here. So I want to take a quick break here. Any questions? Anything? Any curiosities? Any experiences that you guys want to share with your current existing environments that you may be? Okay. Anyways, so the first one just popped up, coming in as a cluster shared volume. And this is right now, you'll see 9, 10, 11, 12 coming in. So I'm going to let that continue. All right, from a storage automation perspective, VMM has about 25 commandlets what we use for automation of storage. So that's 25 commandlets in VMM, 85 commandlets in Windows Server. And then the providers can do much more. Okay, so there are simplifications on each layer, right? But you do have the ability to span both VMM and now Windows Server 2012 to get the full capabilities. The work that we do with our partners, though, is that we do this at scale. So we have tested 60-node clusters with 250 VMs rapidly provisioned. For anybody that's actually done 250 LUNs to a cluster, it's not easy because clustering doesn't like it. WMI gets a little weird. VDS gets a little unstable. But we have to do this to push the boundaries. This is how we find all the issue with the providers. We find issues in VMM, find issues in Windows. Some of the stuff we've actually had a chance to get fixed. Not everything, but we're getting better. So that's the reason that's the value add that VMM brings to the table is the large scale automation, making sure that everything's ready for the enterprise. So the automation pieces that we cover is block storage, file storage. One of the things that we're looking into is actually automation of Fabric. So for those that are using Fibre Channel, we'll also try to get to Fabric as well. And all of this is using Storage Management API. So let's say you want to take one step further. For those that have seen the VMM sessions already, there's been a ton of investments from our partners that are NetApp, HP, and a few others that are actually building UI extensions. I think NetApp, the one that Vijay showed yesterday, was a backup extension. Right? So we'll see more of those. This is actually something that's open to you as well. So if you wanted to create your own extensions and bring in your own capabilities, maybe your own management UIs, you can actually do that as well. How to release a storage? It's pretty much open. Right? If you can enhance some capabilities, we can work with partners to leverage some of their own capabilities that are maybe not covered as part of the basic or the core capabilities of Windows. There's a feature called pass-through in SMAPI. I'll actually quickly cover that in a demo a little bit later on. This is actually how we do NAS. So SMAPI doesn't have the capabilities to go and provision a file share on a NetApp device. Okay, so we use pass-through to do SIM calls down to the providers using get instance, invoke, enumerate, and that's actually how we get down to the underlying provider to do these operations. So we can actually go above and beyond what's available in Windows and deliver NAS, deliver Fabric automation. For those that are interested in orchestration and maybe orchestration to a non-Windows application, Windows Server 2012 also supports REST interfaces. So if you load up the IIS OData extension, you will actually, with some work, you will also get REST endpoints. Once you have a REST endpoint and you have a Java application, the thing on the other side doesn't matter if it's Windows or not, right? It's a REST endpoint. So those applications now can leverage the capabilities in Windows with no third, middle layer to go from maybe Java to some managed code to then talk to Windows, right? You load up this extension in IIS, you run through the schema, get the endpoints, and then you can do really sophisticated automation, orchestration. All right, so from a storage commandlet perspective, this is in Windows Server 2012. If you run, if you just do the module and get a count on the objects coming from the module, you'll get about 82 commandlets. The biggest ones that are in there are around virtual disk management. Virtual disk is what you would call a LUN as well, or storage volume. Virtual disk is obviously an overloaded term, but this is what the API supports. There's disk and physical disk management. So SMAPI supports the ability to create storage pools. Storage pools are created from a set of disks. So you can add disks to a storage pool. You can remove disks. That's why we need those APIs. SMAPI also handles all of what VDS would handle. Disks, volumes, partitioning, formatting, all of that is actually handled through SMAPI. Supports masking sets. This is how we mask unmask. And like I mentioned before, storage pools. I've got the two links down there for the, if you want to find out more information about that. This is PowerShell. It's free in Windows Server. There's WMI, PowerShell, and REST for these interfaces. So the way that VMM actually leverages this architecture is we are a client sitting on top of the WMI interfaces. Any client can leverage these. So third parties can also leverage this yourself in your organization. You can also take advantage of these APIs. So on the left-hand side of this diagram, we've got the core capabilities that I showed you before via SMAPI. And this drops down to all the underlying providers. The pass-through API that I mentioned before, this is where we can do, for example, performance counters that you can't get natively through SMAPI. I'm talking about performance counters for the array or for the switch or for the NAS device. Right? You can use pass-through to get those counters. This is how we do NAS, how we're looking into Fabric as well. And in fact, if there's something special on the array that only this particular vendor supports, right? But they have an SMS provider and they built their extension, just as an example. You can use pass-through, and I'll show you an example of that, of how to get to pass-through, to still leverage that capability and use the core capabilities in Windows. All right. So from an array support perspective, obviously now with we have support for more vendors today, SMAPI opens us up to even more. So we will continue investing in standards-based management. This is the a SMIS as a standard that is, from a Microsoft perspective, a long-term investment in standards-based management, not just storage, just in general. Right, so we will continue attending PlugFest. We've been to the last, 10 PlugFests. These are held 5 times a year, and we get to meet with all the partners. At the last PlugFest, if you go to snea.org and you look at the PlugFest information there, I think there were 17 partners there. Two of them were Brocade and Cisco, for example. They were actually sitting next to each other. To see two partners that typically are, fight against each other in other situations, the PlugFest actually ended up being very, very useful and very productive. And finally, the validation that we've done in VMM is really focused around getting partners, giving partners the ability to validate their own providers at their own in their own timeframes without having us really needed to be involved. So we created this huge PowerShell script, again, using all of our commandlets that test both functionality and scale. So that script will be available at the end of June, and so it's about 4,000 lines of PowerShell. So if you guys want to learn how to actually use all our storage APIs, that is the one-stop shop for that. It's actually built in a test case, as a test case driven, so you have a lot of modular functions that are reused over and over, and then about 50 or 60 test cases that we've given to our partners. The reason why we're leveraging this and giving it out to our customers is we figure, well, if the partners can do it, and if we're basically saying, you pass this script, your provider's ready to go for us, at least for us to continue testing. Well, we figure, why not give it to customers as a way of smoke testing their environment? They just deployed this 16-node cluster, got the SAN in the back end. Does it work? Does it scale? Where are some bottlenecks? At a minimum, give me a baseline of how this system was performing before I put it into production. Those are some of the reasons why we want to put it out there. And also, PowerShell is powerful, right? So we want to give you the most experience. If you want to build your automation, there should be nothing stopping you from doing that. Yeah, that's all covered there. All right, so this is the list that we had in RTM as far as partners. Includes all the major vendors that we've been working with. And so with SP1, we're continuing to add more partners, and that does include SMB-based providers. There's some partners that have their providers in development, so it's just a matter of time before they get that provider out and running. So based on this list, what's missing? Is there any partner that you guys work with that we should be looking at or that we should be focusing on? No? So we have everything that you have here. Okay? If you think of anything, just let me know. I'll be here right after the session as well. I'm sorry? So the question is Huawei, right? If we work with Huawei. We have had discussions with them, but at this point, we haven't actually ever seen their hardware. So we know that they have a provider. We don't know the state of the actual provider itself. So we have reached out to them a few times. I think we do have had a few calls. So it's just a matter of time before we can update this table. And I don't have the link. I should have put it up here. This table, as we validate providers and as they go through the test harness, they will be put on our public website. So as part of our the storage management page in VMM documentation, you will have the list, this ongoing list. So once Huawei and any other partner passes validation, they'll go up on the list, and then we're asking all partners to have a landing page to say, this is where you can get all of the information for SMIS/VMM Microsoft System Center integration, right? So you have one-stop shop where you can do all this all this investigation. Okay. Yes, sir. So Virtual Machine Manager 2012, storage management. And then you'll get to the actual content page for 2012. And then you'll see this table here. If I can quickly pull it up right after we're done, then I'll try to do that. Yes, sir. The question is, the statement that I made around SMI support natively in Windows, does that mean that we won't have to use the providers? So let me clarify this statement. Windows will now natively talk SMIS to providers. Okay, so previous to Windows Server 2012, there was no SMIS support. So that's where we had to come up with our own service. That service is now part of Windows. Now, any Windows Server box, when you enable that feature, can talk to an SMIS-capable array. That's okay. All right, so let's jump back to the last demo. I'll actually show you that script. So, anyways, okay, so here's a cluster with the new CSVs added to it. All right, let me jump back to this environment. So, I'm using Script GUI here to show you this. I mean, you can use any scripting language, any IDE you want. This one just gives it all nice color-coded information, color coding. But the key piece, so this is the test harness. This is what we're going to be putting up on the on TechNet as part of our website, from our documentation. And the key pieces to note here is that first thing is that everything is driven from a. Actually, didn't open this up before. So everything is driven through a configuration file. So when you put in here your array, your pool, your hosts, all this information that you want, That's all driven through there. So once you have that, you actually don't have to touch this. All you really have to do is enable and disable test cases. Everything for the most part is a function. And so this is how we, you know, we're reusing a lot of these functions throughout the test harness. Everything is job-based. So for those of you that actually have done automation, one recommendation I would give you, so let's say you're deploying a VM. We've seen a lot of partners and customers that check the status of the VM deployment by checking the state of the VM. VM under creation, VM under creation, VM under creation, VM powered off, VM powered on, therefore done. So the recommendation here, and you'll get this also in the script, is actually to use jobs. So this particular function isn't the job function itself, but let me see if I can get to the... Anyways. Jump back to that. So basically, we go through jobs. Everything is submitted through a job. This is not a PowerShell job. So VMM has had job support since 2007. These are our own jobs through our engine, right? You can get a reference to that job and check the status of that job. That job will have in progress or completed, failed, why it failed. You get a rich set of information. That's actually the right way to go when you're doing automation. So if you're not familiar with that, this test harness will give you a really good introduction on how to use jobs effectively and at scale. So then we get from the core functions, we get to functions around the actual storage automation tasks. So this function itself is not a test case, but in this particular one, we're basically unregistering or masking, we're hiding the path from multiple runs in parallel from a host. Right, and the key piece here is that we are, for example, getting the storage logical unit, and then we will unregister this. So this is a VMM commandlet. We'll unregister SE storage logical unit. This is actually in a for loop, so it's multiple runs. We'll unregister 10. Right, this is all asynchronous, so we're not waiting for the jobs to complete. That's why we need the jobs. Okay, and then the last piece of this script. We'll jump down to the... test cases. So test case 256, for example. This one is actually testing the mounting of multiple LUNs to a cluster. This is a more like a workflow where we will create the LUN, unmask it to the cluster. Then once it's unmasked, we'll grab the disk object and we will initialize it, partition it, format, verify that it's been fully mounted, right? You either had it's a CSV or available disk or it's on DEF, whatever the mount letter is in the standalone case. We'll verify that and then we'll clean up after ourselves, right? So you can actually run this, if you want, as a stress. Well, we'll over and over and over, maybe for 24 hours, or you can just do it as a quick validation. How is this array running? Do I get all my functionality? Is everything working the way I want? One thing that we've been able to find through this is if you have an array without the right licenses and you want to do snapshot, it'll fail, right? And most of the providers actually do return the right error information that says you don't have the license for this, right? So it's good ways at least to understand what's out there in the environment, and you can use this script to test everything that you want to be supported and make sure that it's working when you go into production. Say again. So the question is, do we support adding multiple LUNs to a cluster? So the demo I just gave before actually did this for four LUNs to a cluster. So in some cases, we do support multiple operations through the UI. For the most part, however, especially for those that have experience with our UI, we are single task driven. So we can't deploy, for example, 10 VMs through our UI. We can only do one. In this particular case, we use job groups, and we're able to do four LUNs or 10 LUNs as one operation. So that's one that you can use here. If you do the view script for that, it won't look like this, right? This particular test harness is driven so that you can, at the end of this, you have an output. You got a huge log. You've got even the ability to look at the timing and say, how long did this take? Okay, and the last piece here, once you get to the test cases, So here, this is where you would drive the test cases. If in this particular case, if I were to run this, nothing would happen, right? Because they're all commented out. So you can go one by one by one, enable, 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 until it works. The way that our partners use this is that they start with discovery. Discovery fails, they got to go look at their provider. They got discovery working, create a LUN. That failed, look at the provider. And then they're able to make progress until they get through the whole script. Anyways, so this will be available for you at the end of the month. The other part of this is to show what we're doing with pass-through. So I'm not going to continue this particular demo. Okay. It's on six. So we did that. So 0.7. Okay. So Windows introduces the support for sim methods, sim classes, native in the commandlets. Okay. So the demo I'm going to show you right now is not using VMM at all. It's actually using the PowerShell capabilities in Windows Server to talk to a particular NetApp provider and get all of its data using sim functions, sim classes, okay? So another piece that you should note about Windows Server is if you're familiar with WMI, Windows Management Instrumentation, it's been renamed to Windows Management Infrastructure, Windows MI, right? Because that same infrastructure can be used for non-Windows cases as well, right? So that's why you see Microsoft.management.infrastructure as opposed to instrumentation. Okay, so I'm gonna get my, basically I wanna do a sims operation option, and that's the new object that I'm creating of the MI wrappers. I am going to connect to my NetApp provider. This is the one that I added before. That's my target server. That's the remote device I'm gonna do an operation against. So I need to map to a root namespace. This, again, we're talking about WMI, right? So you have to actually go and say, what namespace am I actually going to go start pulling classes from? Once I have the namespace, I need a password, I need a username, and that's the target namespace that I mentioned before. The namespace on the local machine where I'm executing this command is actually running through Windows Storage PT or pass-through. Right, that's the local namespace. So I'm going to create the new session. So this is a new session to that target provider. I'm going to get the storage volume, the sim underscore storage volume class, has a class name, a bunch of methods. Now this is all described for you so you can actually interrogate what it supports. And now what I'm going to do is actually enumerate instances of storage volume. So this will actually give me all of the LUNs on that remote array. Okay, this is all the information coming back from the array. So another way of looking at this, just to make it a little cleaner, so I'm going to get all the instances, then I'm going to actually walk every one of those instances. And then in this particular case, I'm getting element name, just the name of the LUN. And that's why in the NetApp case, you see volume 4, volume 1, volume 27, whatever. These are the LUNs that I have in my environment, on my array. Okay, and with that, so to wrap up, all the investments that we've made in VMM 2012 around storage automation is really around the private cloud. How do we make storage, number one, easy to consume? Number two, make it so that you can provision and get storage on demand, or at least give your end users the ability to deploy and provision on demand their VMs and actually get some storage behind it. So this is really a private cloud-ready storage automation platform, and in 2012, we're obviously leveraging the capabilities in Windows Server. So really some of the key themes that we're looking at is breakthrough insight, being able to look end-to-end in your environment, having storage be provisioned on your terms when you want, as opposed to the typical waiting game and the human error and everything else that gets involved, and again, ease of use. One of the, there's obviously the CapEx side of storage, acquiring storage, then also the OpEx, right? Running the storage over time does consume money, so we want to make it easier to use, easier to manage. This is the walking in-depth masking. I forgot to hide these slides. I'm just going to blow through these. You'll have these when you download this at home. So with that, related content doesn't matter because pretty much the conference is over. And that's it. So I really appreciate your time. Thank you for sticking around. Hope you had a great Tech Ed. and we'll look forward to seeing you next year. Thank you very much. Don't forget to fill out your evaluations. And any questions, I will be here. Thank you.